Chapter 28. Home Again. There are multiple book worlds, all coexisting in parallel planes, and each unique to its own language. Naturally, varying tastes around the Outland make for varying popularity of genres, so no two book worlds are ever the same. Generally, they keep themselves to themselves, except for the annual Book World Conference, where the equivalent characters get together to discuss translation issues. It invariably ends in arguments and recriminations. Bradshaw's Book World Companion, 2nd edition. I climbed out of the Porsche, slammed the door, and leaned against the stone wall. We'd just done the bad time section within the air affair, which was always tiring and a bit spacey. Despite our best endeavours, our sole reader had simply given up and left us dangling less than a page before the end of that chapter, the Outlander equivalent of letting someone reach the punchline before announcing you'd heard the joke before. Bowden climbed out to join me. I got on better with him than I did with the character who played my father, but that wasn't saying much. It was like saying sparrows got on better with cats than robins. Bowden had a thing going on with the previous written Thursday, and when he tried to hit on me at the Christmas party, I'd tipped an entire quiche in his lap. Our relationship on and off book had been strained ever since.
"That was just plain embarrassing," said Bowden. "You were barely even trying."
I'd taken over from Carmine the second I got home, so I couldn't blame her. I should have let her just carry on. She was doing fine, after all, but, well, I needed the distraction. "So we had a bit of wastage," I said. "It happens." Reader wastage was something one had to get used to, but never did. Most of the time, it was simply that our book wasn't the reader's thing, which was born with a philosophical shrug. We'd lost 6 readers at one hit once, when my brother Joffy went AWOL and missed an entire chapter. It had never been more tempting to hit the snooze button. Mind you, in the annals of reader wastage, our 6 readers were peanuts. Stig of the Dump once lost 700 readers in the early 70s, when Stig was kidnapped by Homo erectus fundamentalists, eager to push a pro-megalith agenda. Unusually, terms were agreed on with the kidnappers, and a new megalith section was inserted into the book. It messed slightly with the whole dream-slash-reality issue, but never dented the popularity of the novel. On that occasion, the snooze button was pressed, which accounts for the lack of a sequel. Kitten death, even written kitten death, carries a lot of stigma. Barney eventually handed over the reins to a replacement and works these days at Text Grand Central. Stig is now much in demand as an after-dinner non-speaker.
"So what's up?" asked Bowden. "I've seen more dynamic performances in Mystery on the Island."
I shrugged. "Things aren't going that well for me at the moment."
"Man trouble?"
"Of a sort."
"Do you want some advice?"
"Thank you, Bowden. I would."
"Get your ass into gear and act like a mature character. You're making us the laughingstock of speculative fantasy. Our readership is in free fall. Want to go the way of Raphael's Walrus?"
It wasn't the sort of advice I was expecting.
"So you'd prefer the old Thursday, would you?" I replied indignantly.
"The gratuitous sex and violence?"
"At least it got us read."
"Yes," I replied. "But by whom?" "We want the quality readers, not the prurient ones who..."
"You're a terrible snob, you know that."
"I am not."
"You should value all readers. If you want to mix in the rarefied heights of quality readership, then why don't you sod off to Humdram and do a plot 9?
"Because," I said, "I'm trying to do what the real Thursday wants."
"And where is she?" he asked with a sneer. not been down this way for ages. You keep on banging on about the greater glory of your illustrious namesake, but if she really cared for us, she'd drop in from time to time."
I fell silent. There was some truth in this. It had been 6 months since she'd visited, and then only because she wanted to borrow Mrs. Malaprop to put up some shelves.
"Listen," said Bowden, "you're nice enough, in a scatty kind of way, but if you try to add any new scenarios, you'll just make trouble for us. If you're going to change anything, revert to the previous Thursday. It's within the purview of character interpretation. And since she was once that way, there's a precedent. More readers and no risk. Who the hell is the Toast Marketing Board, anyway?"
"It's a secret plan," I remarked defensively, "to improve readership. You're going to have to trust me. And while I'm in charge, we'll do it my way, thank you very much. I may even decide," I added daringly, "to add some more about the book world into the stories. It would make it more realistic, and readers might find it amusing." It was a bold statement. The CFG went to great expense to ensure that readers didn't find out about the inner workings of the book world. I left Bowden looking shocked and opened a door in the Yorkshire Dales setting, then took a shortcut through the Spec Ops building to find myself back home. Carmine and Sprocket were waiting in the kitchen and sensed that something was wrong.
"I met Mr. and Mrs. Goblin," said Carmine, "and they seem very..."
"I'm really not that bothered, Carmine. You're taking over. I've added something about the Toast Marketing Board. It'll require line changes on these pages here and an extra scene." I handed her the additional pages, and she looked at me with a quizzical expression. Making up scenes was utterly forbidden, and we both knew it. "I'll take responsibility. Now, get on with it, or I'll have Mrs. Malaprop stand in for me. She'd kill for some first-person time in her logbook." Carmine said no more and hurried from the kitchen.
"I'm hungry," said Pickwick, waddling in from the living room.
"You know where the cupboard is."
"What did you say?"
"I said you know where the cupboard is." Pickwick opened her eyes wide in shock. She wasn't used to being talked to that way.
"Don't use that tone of voice with me, Miss Next."
"Or else what?" Pickwick waddled up and pecked me as hard as she could on the knee. It wasn't remotely painful, as a dodo's beak is quite blunt. If she'd been a woodpecker, I might have had more reason to complain. I held her beak shut with my finger and thumb, and then leaned down so close that she went cross-eyed trying to look up at me.
"Listen here," I said. "Try to peck me again, and I'll lock you in the tool shed overnight. Understand?"
Pickwick nodded her beak, and I let go, and she very quietly sidled from the room. There was a mechanical cough from behind me. It was Sprocket, and his eyebrow pointer was indicating puzzled.
"How did the trip to the real world go?" he asked.
"Not great."
"So I observe, ma'am."
I sat down at the kitchen table and ran my fingers through my hair.
"Perhaps if ma'am would like to change out of her work costume, I could run a bath. Perhaps a long soak might help."
I looked down at the clothes I was wearing. It was classic Thursday. Levi's, boots, and a shirt, faded leather jacket, and a pistol in a shoulder holster. I felt more at home in these now than I felt in my gypsy skirts and tie-dye top. In fact, I would be happy never to see a sandal again, much less wear one.
"You know," I said, as Sprocket brought me a cup of tea, "I thought it was odd in the book world. Out in the real world, it's positively insane." "How was Landon?"
"Dangerously perfect." I told him all that had happened, of Jack Shit being Adrian Dorset, of Goliath, the Toast Marketing Board, and the contention from Jenny that Thursday couldn't be dead. I also told him my suspicions that I might actually be her,
despite what Bradshaw had said, and much evidence to the contrary. "And then I lost a reader, and got pissed off with Bowden, Carmine, and Pickwick," I added.
"Any clues as to Miss Next's whereabouts?" asked Sprocket, as he attempted to keep me on the task at hand.
"Only that Lyle is boring."
"How many Lyles are there in the book world?"
Sprocket buzzed for a moment.
7,000, give or take. None of them particularly boring. That's a trait generally attached to Geralds, Bryans, and Keiths, or at least here in the book world it is."
"Interviewing every Lyle would take too long. Friday and the peace talks are not getting any further away."
"Did you speak to the Jack Shit here in the series?"
"First thing when I got back."
"And?"
"He knew nothing about Adrian Dorset or murders. Didn't even know that Jack wasn't his real name."
"But it's a bit of a stretch, isn't it?"
said Sprocket, his eyebrow pointer clicking down to thinking.
"I mean, it can't be a coincidence, Jack Shit's book being the accident book."
"In the Outland, there are coincidences. It's only in the book world they're considered relevant. What about you? Come up with anything?"
"I went and spoke to transgenre taxis to see if they were missing anyone."
"And?"
"They wouldn't give me any information. I think it was a mixture of corporate policy, laziness, and overt cogism."
"Really?" I replied. "We'll see about that." I went into the study, fetched a chair, and pulled Thursday's shield from where it was still embedded in the ceiling. I turned the shiny badge over in my hand. It was encased in a soft leather wallet, and was well worn with use. It could get me almost anywhere in the book world, no questions asked. "Why would the red-haired gentleman have given this to me?"
"Maybe he was asked to," said Sprocket. "Thursday has many friends, but there is only one person she knows she can truly trust."
"And who's that?"
"Herself."
"That's what the red-haired man told me," I said, suddenly realizing that recent events might have had some greater purpose behind them. "Something happened. Thursday must have left instructions for him to get out of his story, find me, and ask me to help."
"Why didn't he say so directly?" asked Sprocket, not unreasonably.
"This is fiction," I explained. "The exigency of drama requires events to be clouded in ambiguity." I placed Thursday's badge in my pocket.
"Is using the shield wise?" asked Sprocket. "The last time you used it, the men in plaid were onto us within the hour."
"It opens doors, and what's more, I don't care if the men in plaid arrive. We'll do as Thursday would do."
"And what would that be, ma'am?"
I opened the bureau drawer, retrieved my second-best pistol, and emptied all the ammunition I had into my jacket pocket.
"We kick some butt, Sprocket."
"Very good, ma'am."